discipleship journey. We're journeying through the Gospels with Jesus and his disciples, learning what it is to be a disciple of Jesus and learning what it is to be a disciple maker. And I've been collating the stories and trying to work out the progression, and gave myself this challenging passage. I didn't think it was fair to give it to anybody else. It's a lengthy passage, although in some ways it's a shortened version of what's famously known as the Sermon on the Mount. It's a passage that people who aren't of the Christian faith may be familiar with. And in Matthew, another gospel, we have three chapters worth for the Sermon on the Mount. Luke reduces it to less than a chapter, and actually in Luke it's known as the Sermon on the Plain, because Jesus comes down from the mountain where he's been praying and where he's appointed the 12 disciples. He comes down from the mountain and then he begins to preach, and heals first of all, and then he begins to preach. And why the difference? I'm sure Jesus didn't share these teachings just once. I'm sure there were different occasions when he brought these really important teachings to those who would listen, and particularly to his disciples. What can I add in 15, 20 minutes that will add anything to what's been said over the years and what's been studied, these words? I don't feel like I can bring that much. What I will try to do is give you a little bit of context that might just help expand it and help you understand a little bit more of what Jesus might have been saying. And then just bring some of my personal reflections that I've had as I've been reading and studying these words. I'm just going to get a glass of water. Okay, so it starts with blessing. Blessed are those who are poor. What is Jesus saying there? Because obviously it doesn't feel like a great blessing to be poor. I think one of the things that can help us understand these words is the context of patronage. So in that society, first of all, it was a collective society. So there was less of a sense of being an individual, but more as belonging to society, belonging to a pack, maybe. And you had patrons and clients. You had the wealthy who were expected to give to the poor. And in return for giving to the poor would return with honor and praise to the wealthy. And so the wealthy would try and gather clients, would be one way of saying it. They would probably call them friends, but the friends wouldn't deem to call them a friend, as it were. So they would gather as many clients as they could so that they could have as much honour as possible. Because in that society as well, honour was limited. There was only so much amount of honour available. And so you wanted to gain as much honour as you could. And if you gained honour, that meant somebody else lost honor. So the disciples have just been called. 12 disciples have been called together. They've been journeying with him for some time. He's called individual ones to him. And now he calls this 12, this particular 12 who he's going to work with. And I guess they may have thought, you know, we're in. We're in now, aren't we? We're in with the patron, Jesus, the patron who... they knew had some connection to the Father, and that's going to be good for us. We're going to have honour. We're going to have prestige. We're in the right crowd. And actually, Jesus says, no, blessed are those who are poor. He gives honour and blessing to the poor, to the weak, to those who hunger, not to the rich and wealthy. So immediately, he's flipped things, flipped things over. And in Luke, there's a theme in the Gospel of Luke of the mountains being laid bare, mountains coming flat and the valleys being raised up. John the Baptist that started Luke talks about every mountain being laid low and every valley being raised up. And that's the significance of Jesus speaking on the plain. It's all going to become equal in God's kingdom. There isn't going to be the highly honoured and the low status. But in God's kingdom, we are all equal and we are all welcome. What else can I tell you? So he's asking them to let go of that desire for status, but also to identify with the poor. It was interesting, Linda sharing about God challenging her to give away some of her dresses. You know, in this society, we have clothes of plenty. Clothes are generally quite cheap. Well, certainly we can buy clothes very cheaply if we want to. In that society, you may have only had a set of clothing, a shirt and a cloak, or a tunic and a cloak. If you were wealthy, then you might have had a couple of cloaks, and the clothes that you wore would represent your wealth. And if you didn't have clothes or you only had a shirt, you would be identified with the poor, you would be identified with the lower in society. And so in Jesus saying, you know, give up your cloak, give up your tunic, he's saying not just give to others, you know, but actually identify with the poor, identify with those who are lower in society. He challenges them to forgive and not to judge. You know, again, we do it in our society and they did it then. You make judgments, don't you? You walk around Tesco's or Aldi doing your shopping, and without even knowing it, you're subconsciously putting people into classes. You know, that person, they've obviously got a nice job, don't know what's going on with that family, they don't know how to look after their kids. You know, you're making these judgments about people. And Jesus said, no, that's not your place to do. It's not your place to decide who is in, who is out, who is better, who is worse. That's for the Father to judge. It was a good 20 years ago, I think, when I first heard teaching about forgiveness and judgment, and they're different things. So forgiving is not holding somebody to account for something, is letting go of the thing that they've done and trying to let go of the hurt and the pain. But you can do that and still, to a degree, hold judgment. You can think, well, you know, I can forgive them because I'm better than them. I'm kinder, I'm, you know, more loving, I'm a better person, so I can forgive them. But actually, God calls us not to judge, not to make a judgment on the other person, not to put ourselves above somebody else. He had this little parable about the blind leading the blind. And says, you know, the blind can't lead the blind. They'll lead them into a pit. They'll lead them to destruction. Jesus is our leader. Jesus is the one who sets the standard. Jesus is the one who calls the shots. Not us. We don't decide who's in, who's out, who's right, who's wrong. It's Jesus. And he is our leader. And he talks about a good tree and a bad tree, that what's in our heart demonstrates and comes out in the fruit. And if you look at this teaching in Matthew, he expands on this a lot more in terms of what's going on in our heart and how it gets shown externally. What do we do about that? Because I don't know about you, but I've got bad stuff in my heart. And I think we all have bad stuff in our heart, don't we? We have times when we get angry, we might get bitter, we might get resentful, we may just just have thoughts that aren't that helpful, that aren't godly. But what do we do about that stuff? Because Jesus is saying, you know, it's going to come out as bad fruit. What do we do? Well, we have to attend to that stuff, actually. We have to recognize what's there and we have to let it come out, but come out in the right place. You know, you need to have a place where you can confess the stuff in your life that isn't good, and say sorry and receive God's forgiveness. So we acknowledge that there is that rotten stuff in our hearts, but actually, and it needs to come out, but let's bring it out in the right place, and then let's get God to be allowing him to renew us, to renew the thoughts that we have, to renew our hearts. And it's a big work. At the end of this section, Jesus talks about, well, he doesn't use these words. We use them, the wise and the foolish builder. I think we might get that from Matthew, but here he's just talking about a builder who digs down deep to find the rock, and one builder who doesn't dig down deep, just starts building straight away. Digging down deep to find the rock, to find Jesus, or just building straight away. And how do we dig down deep? We dig down deep by putting Jesus's words into practice, and by responding to what Jesus is saying with obedience. And he'll be saying different things to each of us, and there'll be different challenges to each of us. Again, we had that picture, didn't we, of the plank in my eye and speck in somebody else's eye, just to really illustrate that we can be blind to our own stuff, and very quick to point the finger at somebody else, whereas we really need to be asking, okay, Jesus, what is it that you're saying to me? What is it that you're wanting to attend to in my heart? What is it that I need to work on? I was a while ago given a helpful question by somebody who said, keep asking Jesus, what are we working on at the moment? What is it that we are working on at the moment? And I ask that to you now. What is it that you and Jesus are working on at the moment? I imagine it will be different for each of us. There'll be threads and themes and that overlap, but the individual thing that we are working on is unique to who we are. What is it that we are working on? One of the things that I'm working on really slowly at the moment is I'm reflecting on guilt. I'm reflecting on true guilt and false guilt. When I take on, acknowledging the stuff that really is mine to acknowledge, and then recognizing the stuff that actually isn't mine, it's not true guilt, and I need to let go of it. And that's a bit of a journey with me, and it's taking time. It's not happened like that. I'm having to dig deep down to the rock to find out what it is that Jesus wants to say to me about guilt, about true guilt and false guilt. I wonder what Jesus is working on with you, and I wonder how you are putting his words into practice. I wonder what you're doing to get rid of the muck in your heart, or the rubbish in your brain that needs to be cleared out so that his love can come in and cleanse and change and transform. I wonder if there are blind spots. How do we find a blind spot? You know, we're blind to it, aren't we? I think one of the ways we can find a blind spot is beginning to share that inner working in our hearts with somebody that we trust. And listening to what they say, listening to the reflections they bring that may challenge us and may help us to see things differently. Yeah, and are we doing this thing of forgiving and letting go of judgment? And it's a process, isn't it? It's a process, and it's different depending on your relationship with somebody. If you're thinking about something that happened in the past with a person that you no longer have contact with, it's much easier to forgive and let go of that judgment because there's no ongoing relationship. But when there is somebody who is hurting you in the now, that's hard. That's really hard when somebody is causing you pain. it's an ongoing process. I read a book of Brené Brown's in the summer, and she talked about presuming that everybody is doing the best they can. Now, I'm not sure where I'm up to in thinking about that, but that's really challenging, isn't it? That presuming that that person who is causing you pain or offence is actually doing the very best they can. And therefore, who am I to judge? Who am I to stand above that person? Only God can stand above that person, not us. We need to come and stand next to them on that level playing field. We're all on a level playing field. And in the eternal kingdom, everything will be flattened. Are we in that place, or are we trying to take God's place? Oh, there are so many things in this passage. I could keep talking, but I'm not going to. What is it that Jesus is saying to you through these words? And what is it that he is inviting you and him to attend to at the moment? What's the heart work that he's wanting to do? I'm going to invite David.